Hi, and welcome to the American Midwife Series podcast with me, your host, Angelica Malone. Today is going to be a little bit different, and over time, especially over the next few months, you'll be seeing more of these extra special episodes where I hone in on a specific topic about midwifery school, my journey, and what it was like to prepare. I'll probably even have a few guests on. Maybe some of my cohort mates will share some of their advice. But today's episode is going to be special because I'm going to go through with you the process of applying to midwifery school. I will specifically hone in on the school that I go to, and you'll be able to get some tips from there, and I'll be able to answer any questions that you have after the show. But over the next few months, I'm hoping that I'll be able to bring on guests from other schools to share their experience, and I'll be able to provide you with more insight into what it's like to apply to midwifery school, what you're going to be learning if you go to midwifery school, depending on the type of school that you go to, and then just how can you survive and thrive throughout your midwifery school journey. All right, let's get into the show. One more thing before we get into the episode. In this episode, I'll be joined by my friend turned production assistant, Katie Klein. She's going to be kind of the voice of reason and someone I just reach out to every now and then to ask if what I'm saying makes sense. She doesn't say much throughout the episode, but she's there just in case there are things that I say that, one, maybe don't make sense to this person coming from outside the midwifery world, or be that person to ask a question that I wouldn't think about because I've been in the birth world for a while. And as you know, if you're going into midwifery, you may be faced with questions or challenges from those within your circle, your friends, your family. And so Katie is there to kind of play that advocate on that side. So you'll hear her chime in every now and then, and you'll also probably hear from her in future episodes as we dive into these episodes that are on specific topics about applying to midwifery school, choosing a midwifery school, and my journey along the way throughout midwifery school. So here we go. Hi, Katie.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Welcome to the American Midwife Series podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. This is really great.
All righty. So as I shared in the introduction, Katie is my doula client turned friend turned podcast producer, and she's going to be joining me today on the episode to help me dive into what it's like to apply to midwifery school and just some of the questions that might come up along the way. As someone who's already done this application process, sharing it with you seems kind of natural and fluid, but I'm sure that for someone who hasn't done it before, there are questions that come up that I may not answer. So Katie's here to prompt me with some questions and to kind of play that other side of the coin or be the devil's advocate when it comes to exploring these steps within the application process, especially questions that might come up among your family members or your friends who are just unfamiliar with the whole process of applying to midwifery school. So, Katie, thank you for being here.
Glad to be here.
Okay, so I think to jump in, it would be best to start off with, you know, what are the schools that are available? So in this episode, we're going to be talking about schools for people who want to become CPMs and then eventually become licensed in their state as a LM. So CPM stands for Certified Professional Midwife, and LM is a licensed midwife. CPM is a credential that you get on a national level, and then licensure is something that happens on the state level. But before you can sit for the NARM exam and get your CPM license, you have to have gone to midwifery school. Now, I know that there are some people out there who are not interested in being licensed, and I think we should definitely do an episode where we talk about the other schools that are available for those who may not want to become licensed or who want to become licensed but would like to go to a school that might require an extra training or education process before they can sit for the NARM exam. But the schools that I would talk about today, and the one school that I will hone in on in particular, you will not need to do that. So to find a school, you would probably want to go to the meekschools.org. So meekschools.org website, and it'll provide you with a list of MEEK accredited schools. Have you ever heard of MEEK accreditation, Katie?
No, I haven't. And I've read a lot of midwifery blogs and listen to podcasts, and I've never heard of that before.
Okay, so it's kind of crazy, and it's funny because even people within the program at some point don't even realize that they're attending a MEEK accredited school. It's usually a good thing if they're planning to become licensed, but if you're applying to midwifery school, you definitely want to know if the school you're applying to is MEEK accredited. So I'm going to read to you what MEEK describes as MEEK accreditation, and then I will try and clarify as much as possible. So accreditation or MEEK accreditation is required by the U.S. Department of Education to periodically assess and update accreditation standards. And they last did this in 2011, 2012, and culminated in the 2013 standards, which MEEK currently uses. And it is a way of, or a practice of accreditation is a means of conducting non-governmental peer evaluation of educational institutions and programs in order to ensure a basic level of quality. Private educational associations, such as MEEK, adopt criteria reflecting the qualities of a sound educational program and develop procedures for evaluating institutions and programs to determine whether they are operating at basic levels of quality. So, wow. Yeah, schools will decide if they want to become MEEK accredited. And by becoming MEEK accredited, they make it a more streamlined process for students to go through the program and apply for the NARM or sit for the NARM exam and become CPMs and become licensed. If you go to a school that is not MEEK accredited, you may have to take an additional, like I said, set of trainings or education programs to qualify for licensure in your state or to sit for the NARM exam. So already vetted the school and said, yep, this is a great school that's covering all the standards that we think are important in a midwifery school, and they're doing it in a good way.
That's great. That makes sense to me. So they're just saying, you know, you're attending this, and once you graduate from this, you know, accredited program, that you'll be ready to sit for the boards.
Yes, that's exactly what they're saying. Okay, so if you're on the MEEK website and you're looking for a school, you will come up on this page, and it'll provide you with a list of schools that have been MEEK accredited. And it's funny, it's not very long. As we know, the CPM profession in our country is not very big, but these programs are pretty spread out. So the first one they have is Bastyr University, which is the school that I'm going to, and the one we'll jump into on this episode because it's the one I have the most experience with. They have Birthwise Midwifery School, which is located in Brighton or Brinton, Maine. They have the National College of Midwifery, which is in New Mexico. They have Mizzoni Institute of Midwifery, which is in San Diego, California. Birthing Way College of Midwifery, though I'm not sure if Birthing Way College is still up and running, but it is in Portland, Oregon. And one of our guests on the American Midwife Series podcast went to Birthing Way College, Rosemary Loparena. And then there's Florida School of Traditional Midwifery in Gainesville, Florida. There is Midwives College of Utah in Salt Lake City, Utah. National Midwifery Institute in Middlebury, Vermont. And then there is Southwest Wisconsin Technical College Direct Entry Midwife Program in Wisconsin. Mercy in Action out of Boise, Idaho. And then Common Sense Childbirth School of Midwifery in Winter Garden, Florida. So those are the schools that are currently MEEK accredited. And we'll be going into, like I said, Bastyr University. Any questions, Katie, so far?
I was just noting that they really are spread across the country, mm-hmm. Which, you know, would be a thing to, you know, factor into your decision about where you're going to school, obviously.
Mm-hmm. You definitely want to be thinking about what the program is like. Is it a distance learning program? Is it a mixed model program? Is it in person? And I know just from looking at this that there are a few on here that are mixed model, like Bastyr University, Midwives College of Utah. And then I think there are some that are completely in person, like Birthing Way College of Midwifery. And depending on your learning style, you would want to probably take a look at the different education or trainings that they offer and decide which one suits your learning style better. I definitely think that a school that you are doing distance learning means that you're pretty proficient with using a computer. You have great internet access. You're able to keep your computer up to date and use it. And if you have any troubles with it, you can quickly get it fixed. Whereas if you're maybe doing an in-person one, it might be easier to use a campus computer or something like that. And so just thinking about, your resources and what you have available to you as well when you consider your school.
Yeah, that's a great point.
So in this episode, I won't go into so much of why I chose Bastyr University, though it probably will come up a little bit, but this episode, I'm going to hone in on the application process to Bastyr University because that's the one that I did. And it's pretty simple to find out what they require of you before you apply. And I'll just pull those up. You'll want to have all of this stuff kind of prepared and ready before you apply. You don't want to start the application process and still, be working on some of these things if you can help it. They are pretty flexible and, they want to work with you, but they are expecting, graduate performance from the application process to the graduation date, So on Bastyr's website, it asks that you provide them with two letters of recommendation, the official transcripts of all your college level coursework, a $75 application fee, a personal statement, a resume, and prerequisite plan. So I think it's important that I point out that Bastyr University's program for midwifery is a graduate program. So it's a Master's of Science in Midwifery. If we were to go back to that list of schools that were MEEC accredited, Bastyr University and Midwives College of Utah, I believe, are the only two programs that provide graduate level instruction and programming for midwifery. I could be wrong, so you want to double check that yourself. I think there are others that offer an associate's degree, a certificate, or a bachelor's degree. But that also is something you want to think about when you go to choose your midwifery school. What is your goal with becoming a midwife? Are you solely looking to serve your community, maybe open your own birth center or open a practice and, do home births or something like that, where a master's degree may not really serve you best or may not be worth the work that it takes or the financial investment? Or are you looking to go into policy making or working on a global scale where a master's degree might take you a bit further and be able to boost your credibility in midwifery? Not that a licensed midwife without a master's degree is not credible, because midwifery is not really something that requires a degree. It's a skill that's been handed down for generations. So thinking about what you want to do with your work in midwifery is really important as you choose a school. So back to the application process at Bastyr. These are some of the things that you would need. And we'll just kind of go down the list. Any questions, Katie?
No, let's dig into that list.
Okay. So Katie's going to be that person, like, as you're applying, you're super excited. You're thinking, oh my gosh, I'm going to midwifery school. I'm so excited. I'm going to be a midwife. I'm going to be doing all these things. I'm going to save, mothers and babies and all this stuff. But of course, you need that person who's going to like ground you and say, okay, how are we going to get this done? How long is this going to take? Is this what you're actually wanting to do in life? Because it's really easy to just get so excited about midwifery school that you forget about all the fine details. And once you're in it and you're paying for it and you're making all these sacrifices with your family and your time and even your health at some points, you want to know that you really did good vetting in the beginning and that you chose the school that was right for you. And also, once you start doing all this application process, it can get really exciting and you begin to just get really focused on the school that you kind of chosen first. And you don't maybe think about, hey, well, what if I actually thought about this other school and, it's closer to home and I don't have to move, or, they choose a midwife, they help you find your preceptor for you or something like that. And so I really wanted Katie to be on to kind of remind me of those kind of things as we go through this, because you can really get kind of stuck in the weeds as we do this. So,
Well, I will do my best to be the voice of reason.
okay, perfect. So the two letters of recommendation are strongly encouraged at Bastyr University, and I imagine that other programs also require some type of recommendation or a referral from someone saying that they think that you're professional or that you are academically strong or you know, you have some professional experience. And Bastier asks that you provide a recommendation from one academic, current or former professor, and one professional. And so I had one recommendation from my undergrad evolutionary biology professor who had her doctorate degree. And then I had one from a pastor. And so I chose those people because I felt like they would represent two aspects of my life. The professor was someone who I thought, one, she is a woman in healthcare or medicine, or science, however you want to describe it, and had strong research background, was very articulate and knew me pretty well. I was a teaching assistant or TA for one of her classes, and I taught a class. And so she was able to share about my professional or my academic rigor and performance in her class and just how I perform in the academic setting. And then the pastor was able to share more about my heart and my passion for serving underserved communities, and has seen me work with youth, and just has seen me do more things in my personal life that complement why I want to go into midwifery. And so midwifery is, you know, both heart work and science, you know, that come together. And so I thought they would be two good representations of those aspects of my life. And so if you have people in your life who know those things about you, who can balance your, I don't know, how you look and how you're presented to the admissions committee, that's what you want to do. So finding someone in your college, or maybe you went to a technical college or technical school in the past, or even a high school person, if you did not do as well in college, or you felt like in college you didn't make as many connections, maybe there is someone that you did schooling with in another place that would be able to better boost your credibility. That would probably be a good person to reach out to.
Angelica, did you consider any other people as you were kind of making your short list to choose? You know, other folks that might have spoken to different parts of you that you would have wanted to highlight?
In your
application?
That's a good question. I knew I really wanted that professor to write my letter of recommendation. I felt like her and I had built a really strong connection. But I think that if I had done like maybe a yoga teacher training, or I had done something like that, that was a form of education, but represented, you know, this different aspect of my life, I would have considered them as well. Oh. I'm trying to think who else I might have reached out to. Maybe I used to be in the military, so maybe I would have reached out to someone who I worked with there, but I felt like that was not as much of a reflection. I came through like a growth process between graduating high school, joining the military, and then going to college. And I felt like the professor in college was a more accurate person to share that transformation and that, what I was like after that season of my life. So does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes sense. And you know, I'm just hearing from you a little bit of like strategic thinking about getting those two voices and, you know, the time of your life that they're from and what they speak to and how that, you know, highlights what you want to show in your application.
Absolutely. I do think you should be strategic. Like I said, they're looking for graduate performance from the very beginning. And so that means thinking about what, like, how do you want to go into this new career path? What do you want to be your kind of your legacy or your platform? And that should all be playing into how you apply to the program, at least in my opinion. And this is not strategic in, you know, telling a lie or like formulating some aspect of yourself that is not true, but it's highlighting who you truly are and who you're looking to become. That's the strategic nature I'm meaning. So if you are someone who's really into working with single mothers or incarcerated folks, those are the people that you should reach out to, or the people who work in those settings should be the people that are writing your letters of recommendation, who can speak to those aspects of yourself, even if you've only done those things for a short amount of time. This is the beginning of your career. This is the beginning of the shaping of, like I said, your legacy and who you are. So you would like to present that to them in this really beautiful, well-formed package.
Got it.
Okay. So the next are your official transcripts. So if you have any like unpaid dues to the school or late fines, you want to make sure you've taken care of those before you apply for your transcripts. Because if you go to request your transcripts and you've completed all these other things that will take you a bit of time, you don't want this to be the thing that holds you up. And the transcripts are not going to be mailed to you. You're going to request transcripts from your schools, and it's going to be sent directly to the university. The next one is the application fee, which is for $75 at best your university, and I would imagine that other schools have some similarly ranged application fee. A personal statement. So this is the next thing that I think really helps to, like I said, paint the picture to the admissions staff about who you are and who you're looking to become. So Bastyr has a series of prompts that they give you, which helps you to form your personal statement. But you want to be able to take those questions and use them to highlight the things that show your passion for midwifery, for birth, for advocacy, for any of the things that you're really passionate about. And so I thought I would read to you a section of mine. I won't read it all and I won't read through all the prompts, but one of the first things you'll want to make sure that you understand before you apply to midwifery school for this route is that you understand what a direct entry midwife is. So, like I said at the beginning of the episode, all of the schools that I shared that were MEEC accredited are for those who would like to become CPMs and eventually licensed midwives if it's allowed in their state. And those are all direct entry midwifery programs, people who are going into midwifery without a nursing degree first. And they have direct entry programs all across the world. This is not just something we have in the US for those who don't want to go into midwifery or don't want to go into nursing. Like, direct entry midwifery is a specific pathway to midwifery that is credible, but you want to make sure you understand the difference before you go in. So I started off by sharing what I thought direct entry midwifery was that wasn't just a Webster Dictionary definition of direct entry midwifery. So I said, direct entry midwifery is a career path for individuals who'd like to assist mothers in having an out-of-hospital birth. They typically have a background in science with advanced apprenticeship and training in treating the whole woman throughout the prenatal birth and postpartum period. So I also tailored this a bit to the school that I was going to because this is a school that's requiring a background in science. There are other programs that don't require as much experience in science or in the healthcare sciences, but this program does. And so our program is not just a direct entry program, but a direct entry program that's leading to a Master's of Science in midwifery. The next section I'll read to you is what I wrote about, like, why I wanted to go into midwifery and what my goals were for my work in midwifery. And so I actually have a few different sections because I see my work in midwifery happening in phases. But one of the things I wrote was that my second goal is to provide emergency birth services, fistula repairs, reproductive health care, and consulting for humanitarian organizations in the most hostile and remote areas of the world. This is something that has been on my heart since I began university in 2008. After serving Cuban migrants aboard my Coast Guard ship over 10 years ago, I realized that more than anything, I wanted to use my education and gifts to serve refugees and migrants. This mission became even more profound to me as I mentored a Somali refugee during her fourth pregnancy. And so there are other parts in there where I talked about Black maternal health care. I talked about my goals for a practice at some point in time or like a community center. And so this is a place, like I said, to showcase who you are, your share a little bit about your background, to tie in the stories that maybe are told in your letters of recommendation, that share how the school will help you to meet these goals. You also want to be thinking, like, they're accepting me to this program, and I'm going to not just receive information from this university, but I'm going to be able to give back in the future. I'm going to be able to share that I went to this university and now I'm working, you know, in this community, making this major difference, all because of this school's opportunity they gave me to get this training or get this education pathway. And so thinking about that as you write your letter of recommendation is something I recommend.
Angelica, what really struck me when you were reading that was how personal you got and how much you shared. I mean, it is a personal statement, but not holding back and sharing some of those goals seems to be a really important part.
Yes, I went even to a little bit about my birth experiences, and for me, I didn't apply to another school. I was not planning to apply to another school, and I thought this is my shot. This is my opportunity to explain to them why I really want to go to their school and why I'm really prioritizing an education at this university. And so I did. I was very personal and shared why I'm there, and it was it. I do want to make sure that we realize you're sharing personal experiences, but you should not share anything that you don't feel comfortable having to talk about later, because these things did come up in my interview. And so it's okay if there are things that you haven't processed yet or you haven't worked through in order to share publicly. But you do want to do as good a job as possible as helping them to empathize with you and realize why we shouldn't just accept this person, but we want this person to be there. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, that makes sense. And you mentioned you had multiple kind of sections. How long is the personal statement?
Oh, wow, that's a good question. So I'm not sure how long other people's in my cohorts was, like the people who applied, but mine was 4 pages, single space. It was 1600 words.
Okay, so it's really an essay.
I think so. So some of you may know that I was originally planning to go to medical school, and I'm pretty sure that the medical school personal statements are supposed to be a single page.
Oh, wow.
So, but with the prompts that Bastier provided, I don't think that you could have really done it in a single page.
Okay.
But like I said, I'm not exactly sure what my other cohort mates did, but maybe I can ask them at some point in time. They can let me know. So, yeah, it is kind of like an essay. The next thing is, so I applied to midwifery school right as my family and I were getting ready to move from Guam here to Seattle. And my husband was not here with us yet, and he was not going to be here for like another 3 months. And there were a couple of prerequisites for the program that I had not completed yet. And I was going to do them over the summer. So you apply in the winter, like fall, winter season, you do your interview, February, around February, March, April time period, and you find out, and then you go to school. You start the program in the following fall at the end of that year. So, when I originally decided to apply, we were still living overseas, and I had not yet really made my way to Seattle, and I didn't know what it was going to be like. But in that time frame, I realized getting my family settled. We had never lived in the mainland US as a family before. When we left, it was just my husband and I. So I came back with 2 kids and a dog. And yeah, he wasn't going to be here for the first 3 months. And so I realized after applying, it probably would not have been the best time for me to get settled here in the US with my kids, take these few prerequisite classes that I needed to take, and then immediately start this program that I've heard is very rigorous. So I asked them to hold on to my application for 1 school year, and to essentially reapply, though they kept everything, and just I had to send them what I'm going to read to you now is called an addendum to my personal statement. So I wrote my original personal statement, but in order for them to re like for me to reapply and them to reconsider me for the program the next year, you have to provide them with an addendum. And it's pretty much a way of saying, this is what I've been doing over the last year. This is why I originally didn't apply, or I had to postpone my application. This is why you still want me to come to your school. And so I won't read all of it to you. It is 333 words, so nowhere near as long as my original one. But I just explained to them, over the last 7 months, since I originally applied to Bastyr, my family and I have resettled here in Seattle. It has been a season full of both toil and triumphs. I explained my daughters and I made the trip from Guam here to Seattle alone while my husband was out to sea. We spent the first 2 months without a car or any of our household goods. So I shared all of that. But then at the end, I went on to say, I also attended this ICTC Full Circle Doula training in Oakland, California. And I shared what I learned from that. I also shared that I went to a childbirth education class. I published my first book. And I shared a little bit about what that was like. And then, I just shared, how I've grown over that time. And then I also explained to them what my plan was for fulfilling those prerequisites now. So it says, finally, I'm planning to enroll in UC Berkeley Extension's nutrition course, followed by their American Politics and Intro to Religion to fulfill the remaining arts and humanities and social science requirements that I didn't have, that the school required.
No, oh, so you were, you know, pretty straightforward about sort of the logistical things of getting your family settled, but then also showed that you, even during that time of change, you were still really interested in the program and in midwifery and birth work, mm-hmm. and kind of how you, you know, stayed connected to that during that transition.
Absolutely. And that is, again, I think kind of goes back to a graduate level program. So of course, in any program, they want to see that you're still committed, even if you have to postpone your application. But in a graduate school, you are going to be juggling your family, school, practicum, possibly work if you need to work. And so they want to see, how does this person handle those things? And that's not to say that you have to be able to do everything and everything well, but that you're aware of all your responsibilities. You're critically thinking about how you're going to tackle each of them, how they're going to work in unison with, like, in conjunction with one another, and then how do you see things happening in the future? They want to see that you're creating the plan, not that you're looking for them to create the plan for you.
When you said that you realized you needed a little bit more time, where were you in the application process? Had you already been accepted, or had you applied and were waiting to hear if you were accepted?
So I was always in communication with one of the admissions advisors, and I think that I had actually provided her with everything. And they were maybe in the process of maybe calling me for an interview or like reviewing everything. And that's when I said, actually, you know what? I don't think I had everything, because I did not. Well, I think I actually had provided everything. And I was just in the process of talking with the counselor about when and how I would fulfill the things that I didn't have, which were the doula training, the childbirth education training, and the couple of college classes, the arts and humanities type classes that I hadn't taken in undergrad. So I had pretty much had everything there, and they can take that without those other prerequisites if you have a plan for them and accept you to the program. And so I think I was at that stage, and I just realized, you know what, let's not hear back from you guys yet. Hold on to all those things I gave you. I need to take this time to take care of my life and take care of my family. And when I come back to you, I will have taken care of my family and have a plan for how I'm going to do these prerequisites. And so a part of that time where I was stepping back, I actually took care of some of the prerequisites. So I still, when I officially reapplied, had a couple left, but I had also still taken care of some, which shows, you know, she's proactive. Like, even though she was going through all this stuff, she didn't just like sit around and wait and say, again, I haven't done all these prerequisites and I'm still going to get them done. She actually completed some of them.
Yeah, that makes sense. And you brought up an important point. So you were in touch with an admissions counselor the whole time. What was that like?
That was really great. Their admissions counselor is pretty involved and will help you find places to take your prerequisites. If you haven't had a chance to take them, they can help you find pretty low cost places to take your prerequisites. And they're pretty forthright about what they need. But I will tell you, it's very self-driven. So they are not going to reach out to anyone for you. They're, unless it's like specific, like they're trying to assess whether or not something is accepted, like they can accept something that you provided them, but they want to see you doing the work and being very proactive.
Okay, that makes sense. So it's a little bit of a one-sided relationship, but it sounds like they can help point you in the right direction for things.
Yeah, I definitely felt like they wanted me to be there and that they were excited to have me, but there was not this idea that, you know, if you can't take care of some of this stuff, then we're going to do it for you. Not at all. It was very much like, we want you to be here. Here are all the things we need from you. Here are some places that you can go to get those things. Let us know when you've got them.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So the last two things are a resume and a prerequisite plan. So my resume, I definitely don't think we should go into resume today because it's so big of a thing. But if you have not created a resume, or you have a resume that hasn't been updated, I would really encourage you to reach out to a college or like a business, small business association or something like that, that can help you formulate your resume, because this is not the first time or the last. It's not the last time that you're going to use your resume in midwifery school. When you go to apply for a practicum site, you're going to also submit a resume. So you want your resume to be a very good reflection of who you are, and to be clean, easy to read, up to date, as best as you can make that possible. And so I did a few revisions of my resume. I don't know if you've ever heard of like having different resumes for different audiences. Yeah. Have you ever heard that, Katie? Yeah. So I definitely did that. I had a resume for someone on the admissions council reading it. I had it for a possible practicum site or preceptor. I had it for, I eventually created the one for the preceptor, but I had a few versions beforehand that honed in on different parts of my skills and experience. So one of them honed in on my work, working in diverse communities and working with refugees, working with like a resettlement agencies, my global upbringing and things like that. Then I had one that focused on my experience taking a lactation training and serving people in Guam and in Puerto Rico with breastfeeding, and my book, which talked about breastfeeding and things like that. And so I tailored each one. And then when it was time to apply to midwifery school, I used the one that would apply to someone that would appeal to someone who wanted to learn more about like why I wanted to become a clinician. Because that is what you're becoming when you go to midwifery school, at least AMIC accredited midwifery school, is they're preparing you to become a professional healthcare clinician. And so you want a resume that says this person, even if they haven't done that in the past, is definitely someone we would trust with caring for human bodies, you know, and taking care of people. And so figuring out a way to show what you're good at, your experience, but also that you're this credible, respectable, professional, responsible person, you want that to translate in your resume.
That makes sense. You mentioned making sure to highlight experiences where you've worked with people and served people, because that's what you'll be doing as a clinician. Are there any other just kind of like high level tidbits that you know, would recommend that I would put on my, you know, hypothetical resume for midwifery?
Yeah. If you're really good at organization, that's something you want to put on there. And it could be physical organization. It could be actual organizing, like office management. One of my cohort mates worked in restaurant business for a long time and like serving. And so she was really good at like managing schedules for people and juggling multiple tasks at one time and thinking on her feet. And so don't just think that, oh, I have to have a science background, or I have to have done healthcare before, or worked directly in a healthcare setting. No, there are definitely skills that you can bring, that you'll bring to your work as a midwife, that, you know, seemingly have no correlation or like association to midwifery, but are really, really good things. So organization, being responsible, being on time, being good at managing multiple tasks at once, thinking on your toes. Those are all things that you can hone in on and make your resume just all about that. You know, if you, you know, went straight from high school to college to now this, you know, this graduate program, you know, you probably had to be a very organized person. You probably had to be someone who was responsible. Maybe you took on extra tasks at school. Maybe you did tutoring. And so highlight that, like you're a people person. You care about your community. You care about community building. You care about seeing other people succeed and have positive health outcomes or positive outcomes. There are lots of angles you can take, and that can be the whole platform of all the things that you provide for them: your letters of recommendation, your personal statement, your resume.
How long is your resume?
Okay. this is not normal. I've had like 5 lives. So my resume was 3 pages. But I would say that if you could make your resume a single page to 2 pages, that is best. Again, I won't say I threw everything at them, because you don't want to do that either. You really, I think, should hone everything in, like I'm saying. Mm-hmm. But my first page was my experience. So my undergrad experience, my experience in the military, my training I had in the military. I was an EMT in the EMT as well in the military. Then I put my doula training, my childbirth education training. So that was all on one side. And then the rest of that first page was my experience in each of those places. So I was a TA for undergrad, and I explained a little bit of that. And I didn't go too much into those things, but I did write like my healthcare experience. What had I done in a healthcare setting? What was my role as a lactation counselor? What were some of the things that I did? How was I being innovative? Those kind of things. My second page was those things as well for the different experiences or educational paths that I've had. And then my final page was my skills or my assets. So being flexible, being multicultural, organization, leadership, things like that. And then I had people that I put my, the people who were my letters of recommendation, those were on there with their contact information and my publication. So places I had written about lactation. So if you've written about being a doula or you've written about anything, you know, write those things. If you published a paper in undergrad or you wrote for your high school newspaper and there are really strong writing examples in those things, add those to that. You know, if this is where you really want to go and you're not thinking, you know, this is just one of my five options, showing them, just like I said, not how they're going to provide you with an education, but that how you're going to in the future give back and, you know, hopefully attract more people to their school. That's what you want to show to them. Like, this is someone who is going to, we're going to invest in, but it's going to come back tenfold to us. And they've already done that with, you know, high school education and a few years in college, you know? So if you have areas where you can show them, I would not just take this education and, you know, do something, I will take it and do something really great. If you can show that, then do that. But it's also okay to just say, you know, I want to go to this school because I think it's great. It's in my hometown. I love Seattle. I love Kirkland or whatever it might be. And I want to become a midwife and be able to teach at Bastyr. You know, there are ways that you can make it suit your personality. This is my personality that's coming through as I share this with you. But I want you to be thinking about your personality and your goals and how you can showcase that through your application process.
That's good advice.
Thank you. All right. So the last thing is your prerequisite plan. So this was pretty simple. I don't even think I typed this out. I think I put this in an email, but you would want to clarify with the admissions counselor what they want or how they want it. But you want to tell them the prerequisite classes that you have not fulfilled and how you will be fulfilling them. So I'm going to pull up the prerequisite classes that Bastyr requires. And there are a few that I had not completed that I had to complete. So Bastyr allows you to apply to their midwifery program either with a bachelor's degree or I believe it is 90 credits. Yes, 90 quarter credits. So there are two options. Students may enter with a completed bachelor's degree and the required basic proficiency prerequisites. Or option two, students may enter the program without a bachelor's degree but must complete the basic proficiency prerequisites in addition to the general education prerequisites, totaling a minimum of 90 quarter credits. So that's quite a lot. If you have 90 quarter credits, you know, you probably were pretty near graduation. And that's what happened to me. I was in undergrad for 3 years. I was a pre-med student. My husband ended up having to move overseas and I had to stop school. And so I didn't actually complete it, but I was also already on a science pathway. And so I had a lot of the prerequisites that they needed. So let's go down to the prerequisites that they require. They require college algebra or stats, 4 credits, credit hours worth, psych, introduction to nutrition, gen chem with a lab, microbiology A&P series, which is 8 quarters. So that usually I think is like A&P 1 and 2. Doula training, that is doula or two labor approved, and childbirth education training, that's either ICEA or LAMAZ approved. And then they also would like you to have English Lit or Comp, 9 quarter credits worth, public speaking, natural sciences, arts and humanities, 15 quarter credits, social science, 15 credits, and elective, 17 credits. So the arts and humanities and the social sciences were what I was missing. And so that's why I ended up having to take a few classes. I ended up, like I mentioned earlier, it was like, I think I ended up taking aging and society, world religions,
How else. Did you even determine what classes you didn't have? Like, I'm hearing that list and thinking about college and that seeming like a lifetime ago, not even remembering some. Did you have to look at your transcript?
Yes. So I already had my own copy of my transcript. So if you don't have a copy of your transcripts, definitely get those before you even apply, because just like you're saying, Katie, you don't know if you don't have some of these things. So I think that I had my transcripts, and I may have even shared with the counselor, my admissions counselor, these are what I have so far. I don't remember taking any arts and humanities or social science classes. And so she was able to look, and she sent me a website link that would allow me to see like what I was missing or something like that. I think she said, oh, she told me actually in an email. Sorry, guys. She emailed me and she said, you're missing this many credits of this and this many credits of this. Here is where you can go and get these things fulfilled. And so that's how I found UC Berkeley. And then I also ended up using this other online school. UC Berkeley is very expensive for online school, but I didn't know beforehand. And I had already started working on, I was really trying to get everything done as quickly as possible.
Yeah.
So I'd known about UC, like all the UC schools online, I'd known about for a while. And so I just immediately, when I realized, okay, I need this many credits of arts and humanities and social science, I just enrolled in all the ones I needed. And then she told me about this other thing, and I was like, oh crap, I could have paid a third of the price. So definitely, if you think that you'll have to take some classes, reach out to the admissions counselor and take their advice. They have some really great advice. And I will say that the program that she referred me to was a much more doable program. The UC Berkeley one is totally fine, but it was pretty rigorous. And it stressed me out over the summer before going into midwifery school, because I thought, oh my gosh, I've taken, you know, all of these high level science classes, and I'm going to fail because I can't take a politics class. And I'm not going to go to midwifery school because I can't take, you know, I can't graduate a world religions class or something like that. So, just keep all that in mind and try and keep it as simple as possible. You're going to be going through a lot during this, preparing everything, thinking about the changes you're going to have to make to your family life or your home life, if you have to move and stopping a job or cutting back hours. And so making this as gentle on you as possible, I really, really recommend. And so don't create extra work for yourself if you don't have to.
Yeah, that's a good rule.
Okay, so that is pretty much the whole application process. What are you thinking, Katie? Like, if I was your friend and I told you, okay, I've gotten all my stuff together for midwifery school, I'm like applying, and I sent it all to my admissions counselor, I'm just fingers crossed.
Yeah, I mean, now what? Like, do you just wait a really long time? how do you just wait so patiently after you're doing all of that work?
Yeah. So I don't think I was waiting patiently. I probably would recommend that you go take like a little weekend vacation somewhere, hiking in the woods or, you know, somewhere fun, so that you're not stressing about this. But I think that I waited maybe a couple of weeks to hear back, or maybe I don't really remember how long, but it was not long. I don't think I waited like over a month to hear back.
Mm-mm. That's good.
And I'm pretty sure that the next thing that they sent me was a request to interview. So let me see if I can find that. And so they pretty much email you saying, hey, we got your application, and we would like you to come on this date for a interview. And that was when I got really nervous. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, I have it. I found it.
All right.
I can read it to you. It says, hi, Angelica. Congratulations. After reviewing your application to our Master of Science in Midwifery program, we would like to invite you to our campus for an in-person interview, tour our campus, and have lunch with current students in the midwifery program. We currently have interview dates available for, and she shared when they had interview dates for, and then she told me that, you know, this person I could be in contact to help me if I had any concerns up until that date. And then she also said, lastly, here are the prerequisites you still have remaining. Please let me know if your plans change at any time for completing these courses. So she listed the courses, how many credits they were, when I was planning to be done with them. And then she said, best, her name, admissions advisor.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. The first thought that comes to my mind is, what do you wear to a midwifery school interview?
Yes, that's what I was thinking. So I wore a black, like a black top. It was like a cotton top, like ribbed. The body part was ribbed and the arms were long sleeve, but sheer black. And then I wore these like high-waisted black culotte pants and clogs, clog heels.
You sound professional, but fun at the same time.
And that's totally, totally midwifery school and the people at midwifery school. Professional, but fun. Lots of funky colors and big, beautiful jewelry. Definitely share your personality through your clothing. But of course, be professional. I also was thinking, what would I wear if I was actually working in a clinic setting right now? And I was going to see a client, or it was maybe my first day working, you know, not after years of being a midwife, but like my first day. And I wanted people to think, oh, this totally looks like someone who I would respect and would let take care of me and my baby. But also, she looks fun and approachable.
Yeah. One, you probably wanted to be comfortable and, you know, who knows how long you would need to be on your feet or anything like that.
Yeah. And at the interview, the way it works, it's kind of like a day long interview thing where you go in and you go into this room and it's a big table. And I probably shouldn't reveal too much because it's kind of exciting to just go through this. I actually shared it on my Instagram stories and I think I may have saved it. I hope I saved it. I'll go back. If you're listening to this and you you have Instagram, go to Instagram. My account is at Angelica Malone. And you can go to one of the circles that says the stories that says midwifery. And I think I saved it my very first, that day that I was there for my interview.
I'll have to watch.
Yeah, I think I did. Hopefully I did. If not, I'll need to go back and find it. But it was a whole day long process where you go in the morning and you're with other people. I'll let you know that. You'll be with other people, so you won't be alone. So you'll get to see possibly these people that will be in your cohort.
That's cool.
Yeah. Yeah. We should probably have another episode where we talk about the actual interview process. Well, if you have any questions, anyone who's listening and you want to know more about the application process to midwifery school at Bastyr University in particular, because that's the one I have the most experience with, feel free to email me. My email address is hello@angelicamalone.com. I want to definitely share other perspectives around midwifery training and education. So thank you for listening. Katie, thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Katie will be back for other episodes, especially as we delve into these specific topics around midwifery education and training in our country. So thank you, Katie, for being here. And thank you all for listening. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to the American Midwife Series podcast with me, your host, Angelica Malone. I hope you found it useful and you were able to get some insight into how you can locate a MEEC accredited school and how you can present yourself as an ideal midwifery school candidate. I would love to answer any questions that came up for you in this episode. You can do that by emailing me at hello@angelicamalone.com. I am a full-time student, midwife, and graduate student, so it could take me a little bit to get back to you, but I promise that I will reply. You can also join me on Instagram. My username is @AngelicaMalone, and you can also visit my website, www.angelicamalone.com. If you enjoyed this episode, I'd really love it if you could leave a 5-star review on your podcast platform. By doing that, you help more people to find the American Midwife Series podcast. I'd also love it if you could leave in your review what you found most useful and intriguing in this episode. If you're a seasoned midwife interested in being a guest on the American Midwife Series podcast, or you are a midwifery student attending a MEEC accredited school, I'd love to hear from you. You can email me and just share a little bit about yourself. My hope is that I can share multiple pathways to becoming a midwife, what the journey's like to make midwifery a sustainable profession, as well as the highs and lows throughout your process. Alrighty then, I'll see you soon for another insightful and real conversation about midwifery in America. I'll talk to you soon. Bye.